It's meeting of the House Special Committee on Energy to order at 10:21 a.m. on February 11th. Members present today are Representative Fields, Representative Lincoln, Representative Rauscher, Representative Zolkowski, Vice Chair Representative Sponholz, and myself, Representative Greyer Hopkins. Please let the record reflect that we do, in fact, have a quorum for business today. And assisting us today is our Record Secretary, Butch Carver, and our trusty LIO moderator over there behind the screen. So thank you. Committee aide today is Joe Hardenbrook, and he's also with us. Before we start, it is my intent to cancel the meeting on Thursday of this week for the Special Committee on Energy. However, this committee will continue to sit as the Department of Environmental Conservation Budget Subcommittee, and they will meet at Thursday at 11:15. So for all your staff in the room, we'll still be here for the DEC Subcommittee on 11:15. On Thursday at 11:15 that Rep. Ortiz will be running. Are there any questions before we get down to business today? All right. Today we have one new piece of legislation on the calendar, House Bill 232 by myself, Representative Hopkins. This is an act relating to a municipal air quality improvement tax credit and relating to a municipal energy efficiency new construction tax credit. After we get an overview of that and answer any questions the committee might have, we're going to go ahead and hold that bill back, and then we'll be adopting a new committee substitute on House Bill 151, dealing with creating an electrical reliability organization that we've heard a fair bit of in this committee, and my staff, Representative Hardenbrook, will go through and update the committee on what those changes are. We'll bring that bill back for comments next week and hopefully pass that out so we can move it along with the process. At this point, I'd like to hand the gavel over to the trustee Vice Chair Sponholz and take a brief at ease.
A brief introduction to the bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, this is Representative Greyer Hopkins from House District 4. Chair Sponholz and the wonderful Energy Committee, thank you for the opportunity to do a quick overview of House Bill 232. This year, the Fairbanks North Star Borough approached the Interior Delegation, seeking to have the option of, as a second-class borough, to utilize municipal tax credits to encourage energy efficiency and air quality improvements when private property is newly constructed or renovated. HB 232 is the result of that request. As stated earlier, it is my hope to hear the bill today and take public testimony on the bill during our meetings next week and then look to the will of the committee in the future. House Bill 232 allows local governments to offer municipal tax credits for home and business owners who invest in property improvements, which result in increased energy efficiency or improved local air quality. This bill does not mandate any action by municipalities. It simply offers local governments additional avenues for addressing local challenges and priorities and creates partnerships with local businesses to stimulate and diversify local economies. Relying on the colloquial saying that local problems are best solved through local solutions, House Bill 232 allows municipal tax credits to be targeted towards new construction that results in overall energy efficiency. Additionally, this bill allows municipalities facing chronic air quality issues again to offer tax credits to businesses and residents who make investments that will result in a reduction of PM2.5 pollution. It is my hope that these tools will result in more interior Alaskans choosing to convert their home heating systems and connect to the expanding interior gas utility, maximizing the state's return on their investment. An additional benefit of this legislation will be streamlining the efforts of the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the Department of Environmental Conservation to improve air quality in interior Alaska. Additionally, the air quality improvements credit could be utilized by other municipalities such as the Mat-Su in the Butte area, with the only other part of the state currently that has a PM2.5 problem, or if any pop up in the future. Currently, the Department of Environmental Conservation State Improvement Plan to deal with PM2.5 does not look to get us under the federal level of PM2.5 pollution until 2029, 10 years from now or 9 years from now. And this hopefully could speed that process up and create fewer non-attainment days, which yesterday, for example, was a non-attainment day in both North Pole and Fairbanks. The bill allows for maximum flexibility by municipalities who choose to offer these credits. This avoids a top-down approach to local issues, and again, it's not a mandatory tax credit that lowers municipalities' income and forces distribution of that tax dollar onto other property taxpayers. This allows municipalities to create their own tax credit as they see fit to address their local problem. This simple no-harm bill will foster new partnerships with local contractors, businesses, and homeowners. Unleashing local creativity is critically important, allowing local governments to harness their own power of private enterprise and address local challenges and priorities where they see most effectively. With the information of the committee, we have provided the bill packet, and in that bill packet are the following items: the current and latest version of the bill, a sectional analysis of the few sections of the bill, and letters of support from the Alaska State Home Builders Association, the Alaska Municipal League, and the Fairbanks North Star Borough. At this point, Chair Sponholz, I'd like to pass the mic over to Mr. Hardenbrook to walk the committee through the short sectional analysis.
Proceed.
Thank you, Chair Sponholz. For the record, Joe Hardenbrook, committee aide to the House Special Committee on Energy. Very quickly, the House Bill 232 is an act relating to municipal air quality improvement tax credits and relating to municipal energy efficient new construction tax credits. Section 1 amends Section 29.45 to reinstate the air quality improvement tax credit, which was sunsetted in 2016. This action applies only to local governments with areas failing to meet federal or state air quality standards. Improvements must have been made in the preceding tax year, and the municipality shall be responsible for developing and implementing eligibility standards and other criteria. Section 2 further amends Section 29.45 to create the Energy Efficient New Construction Tax Credit, allowing municipalities across the state to offer property tax credits to offset the cost of new energy-efficient construction in the prior tax year. Municipalities choosing to participate in this tax credit shall be responsible for developing and implementing eligibility standards and criteria. Madam Chair, that concludes my overview of the sectional analysis.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Fields.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I just wanted to note that home builders from my neighborhood have already talked to me about supporting this bill, and I'm looking at it, and I don't see my name on, so I have to add myself as a co-sponsor. Thanks to the sponsor for introducing it.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions for the bill sponsor or staff? All right. Seeing none, thank you for your presentation, and we're going to go at ease. We're going to hold this bill over and give you a chance to come back up on the dais here.
All right. Thank you very much, committee. Heard. Now we're going to go ahead and take up House Bill 151 for a quick synopsis of the new CS and the changes that we have gone through. But first, Madam Vice Chair, may I have a motion to bring that committee substitute before the committee?
Chair Hopkins, I move to adopt the proposed committee substitute for HB 151 Work Draft Version K as our working document.
No objection. It is so ordered. Now that the document is before the committee, will Mr. Hardenbrook please stay at the table, put yourself on the record, and present the changes in the new committee substitute.
Thank you, Chair Hopkins. For the record, Joe Hardenbrook, committee staff to the House Special Committee on Energy. Thank you for the opportunity to do a quick overview on the CS for House Bill 151 and to update the committee on some of the developments that have occurred since our last meeting. The committee chair and committee staff have met and engaged constructively with the leadership of the Senate Special Committee on the Rail Belt Electrical System to continue to hone this legislation while incorporating feedback from the rail belt utilities, stakeholders, consumer advocates, and local governments. Following our joint committee meetings with the other body, the Senate Special Committee has opened public comment on their version of the bill, and they have heard from utilities, stakeholders, independent power producers, and community leaders. The input from these individuals and organizations continues to guide our mutual efforts, as does constructive engagement with the Regulatory Commission. The CS, which the committee has adopted, moves Senate Bill 123 and House Bill 151 into further alignment, reflecting the most recent draft language vetted by the utilities, stakeholders, and advocates. The Regulatory Commission will be meeting tomorrow in a public meeting to review the latest changes to the bill, and hopefully they will continue to endorse our efforts. For the information of the committee, we have provided in the bill packet the following items: the latest version of the bill, which is version K, and a sectional analysis detailing changes from the previous version. And at this point, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to walk the committee through the changes to the bill from our previous CS.
Let's go for a walk.
All right. A lot of this is bookkeeping and general tidying, so I'll sort of skip over the more mundane changes. All references to bulk power system and interconnected bulk power system have been changed to interconnected bulk electric system. These definitions are actually laid out in law, and by changing them, the bill no longer conflicts with other legal definitions elsewhere in statute. The title has been tightened up considerably, and all mentions of the word certified have been changed to certificated to reflect RCA language. Additionally, and I think perhaps quite importantly, on page 1, line 11, to page 2, line 1, there's a new provision added that specifies that a group of utilities, all of which are exempt as municipal entities or political subdivisions of the state, are exempt from the requirement to participate in an electric reliability organization. This is specifically targeted at the Southeast Alaska Power Association, SEPA, and their Swan Lake Tyee Lake Intertie, which ties the communities of Petersburg, Wrangell, and Ketchikan together. This would specifically exempt them from the portions of the bill that call for the creation of a reliability organization. Restructured the bill to separate provisions for applications and approval from the requirements of a reliability organization and what they must demonstrate in order to be approved. Requirement for the RCA to, once regulations are written and a bill is in effect, notify the load-serving entities in a system that an electric reliability organization is required. Restructured the provisions directing the RCA to form an electric reliability organization. The previous bill required the RCA to form a reliability organization if no one had applied to be an ERO within 3 months. The CS applies the notice requirement in D on page 2, and once notice has been given, the RCA will form an ERO if no one has applied to be an electric reliability organization after 90 days. If someone has applied but the RCA has not certified, if they found that their application is lacking, within 270 days, the RCA at that point shall form a reliability organization. On page 3, we now provide a process for the RCA to waive the need for a given network to have an ERO. And again, this addresses concerns from utilities elsewhere in the state. Further on page 3, lines 20 to 22, we emphasize that all users, owners, and operators of an interconnected system must comply with standards, and this includes entities that are otherwise exempt from RCA regulation. Basically, this means that if there are utilities that are part of an interconnected system, even if they are, like, say, Bradley Lake and the state-owned interties that serve Bradley Lake and connect it to the rail belt, they have to comply with the reliability standards even if they are exempt from RCA regulation. Some further technical changes on the bottom of page 3. Page 4 prohibits standards from being designed with the intent to require enlarging facilities or new construction. Basically, reliability standards will not be utilized in order to direct or mandate a utility specifically enlarge or engage in new construction of generation. We clarify that the commission must give public notice and hold a hearing before acting on a reliability standard filed by the reliability organization. We lay out a new process, where the RCA must undertake, which the RCA must undertake in order to modify a standard. The RCA must give the ERO an opportunity to modify any standards that are rejected. Removes a proposed standard or modification that takes effect upon approval by the commission as redundant to existing RCA powers in their tariff statutes. Clarify that penalties imposed by the ERO can be appealed to and reviewed by the RCA. Removed a provision that the RCA may require a reliability organization to obtain a certificate of public convenience and necessity, also known as a CPCN. An ERO is already required to have a CPCN under Section 4205.292. We changed some further definitions and delete a requirement to prepare before file. This specifies that an integrated resource plan must be filed with the RCA as a petition for approval. Further, we change the use of the phrase most cost-effective manner to in a manner that provides the greatest value. Battery storage has been added to the options an integrated resource plan should consider. This is in light of plans on both ends of the rail belt for additional new battery storage, either expanding stuff that's currently in use, replacing it,
Mr. Hardenberg,
construction.
Representative Sponholz has a question.
Thank you. When you were describing the change on page 6, line 11, changes most cost-effective manner to in a manner that provides the greatest value. Is there a definition for greatest value?
Representative Sponholz, I can get back to you on a specific answer there. I can tell you the reason why in work sessions between the House Committee and the Senate Special Committee why this was put in there was because the idea from several of the utilities as well as stakeholder groups that perhaps the highest standard that should be considered is not the bottom dollar, but the greatest value that can be provided to the consumer through increased reliability or geolocation of an asset that would make it more secure for serving a specific community. The idea being that perhaps like the cheapest power plant and cheapest fuel could be built elsewhere than the community that it serves, but because of its distance from the community that it serves, that source of power might not be considered as secure and reliable as one that was located closer to the community.
There was a discussion of also types of fuel stock and ability for new technology to come online, things that, while maybe the RCA looks at the overall public good of their approval and disapproval when it comes to pre-approval down the line, lowest cost is included in there, but it shouldn't be the very singular reason that a project is approved or disapproved.
Follow up? I guess, so I just have a comment that I think that I appreciate sort of the line of thinking, lowest cost isn't always the best, but I do just want to kind of underscore my concerns that, you know, reliability often means redundancy, which also often means more cost. And when I think about value to ratepayers and consumers in the state of Alaska, you know, we should be very cautious, and I know the entire rationale behind, you know, establishing the ERO is to sort of develop sort of a more rational structure for, you know, delivering, you know, energy throughout the state of Alaska, providing more security and redundancy. But security and redundancy are also very expensive, and I want to make sure that we're being very careful and making sure that we're protecting ratepayers as we move forward. And that means sometimes making choices that don't involve creating more redundancy.
Thank you.
And Representative, I will get back to you on an answer on a specific technical definition for greatest value.
Thank you.
Yes. Representative Fields?
Yeah, thanks for the clarification on greatest value. I certainly support that change. Lowest cost can be myopic sometimes. So I had a question, and maybe I just missing. So as I recall, the utilities didn't want this bill to be misconstrued as telling them precisely where to put a transmission line, so we have review of the transmission line in general, but not the exact centimeter where it's located. I assume that page 7, line 21, to page 8, line 6 addresses that and clarifies that they're approving the project and not kind of engaging in micromanagement where the transmission line is sited.
That is correct. There's specific exemptions in there. Basically, Representative Fields through the chair. The the concern mentioned the work that we've done on this bill is trying to look at what other jurisdictions have done when they've interconnected their utilities, see what some of the stumbling blocks are and what some of the hopefully pitfalls that they've encountered that we can avoid as we put our system together. And one of the things that was mentioned was in other jurisdictions there are sometimes quite specific regulations handed down by local governments or regulatory agencies that even dictate what color power lines and power poles can be. So basically this language here is added to give the utilities that hopefully assurance that the RCA will not be micromanaging down to that level.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman. Just want to note on a couple other changes that I appreciate the addition of batteries as an item to consider. And I would note that, you know, Kodiak, for example, has much outperformed Anchorage in terms of utility costs, partly by including batteries. Obviously, very different circumstances, but important to include all technologies. And I also want to express my support for maintaining RCA backstop authority to establish an ERO. I think that's really important to have that accountability. So on balance, I really appreciate the work that you've done, Mr. Chairman and staff, on this very thoughtful update to the bill.
Thank you, Rep. Field.
And just finally, I would note that there's a couple of other items towards the end of the bill that have been included in there, including increasing the length of high voltage above ground transmission line, requiring project pre-approval from 5 to 10 miles. This is at the request of the utilities. Separating high voltage submarine or underground cables from above ground lines for purposes of the definition, and requiring pre-approval if this if these subterranean or submarine lines are longer than 3 miles. Adds to projects requiring pre-approval energy storage devices and reactive compensation devices. And the definitions are renumbered. And then finally, I mentioned that the bill was going to need some changes to the dates, and those have been incorporated in page 9. The RCA must adopt regulations by July 1 of 2021 and updates the effective date of the bill to July 1, 2021. This allows time for the ERO to file their standards under the term.
Representative Fields had a question.
Question, does the 15-megawatt threshold apply to pre-approval of energy storage devices as well?
I'll get back to you on that, Representative. Thank you for the question.
It's a big battery. Any other questions? Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Hardenberg. We'll hopefully bring, we will be taking this back up next week for, I believe we need to have public testimony as well, in order to pass it out and get it into the Resources Committee, where fortunately a number of us sit to continue to hear more on this bill and make sure that it is going forward with a pace that can get this in place so that the effective dates can move forward and the work that the utilities and the stakeholders and the RCA have done together this year, so that we don't lose another year in the process of trying to unite the utilities, which has been an ongoing effort for about 40 years now. We seem to have decent momentum, so I appreciate the committee's patience and urgency as well as we move this forward.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just, I wanted to make sure that the committee was aware that the Senate Special Committee, Chair Hopkins, Joe Hardenbrook for the House Special Committee on Energy. The Senate Special Committee will continue to meet this week at 9 a.m. on Wednesday and Friday. They'll be continuing to take public testimony on the bill and potentially adopting yet a further CS. Take a final invited and public testimony and then look to the will of the committee, and that bill might be moving by the end of the week or next.
Thank you. Any further questions? All right. If anybody has any questions, after they come up after the committee, I'd be happy to meet with anybody at the convenient time for all of us to make sure we're all comfortable and understanding of what's happening. As I stated at the beginning of the meeting, it's our intent to hold the bill. If you do have any specific questions, feel free to email myself or Mr. Hardenbrook. Again, we will cancel the scheduled House Energy Committee meeting for Thursday of this week. However, the committee will be meeting with the DEC subcommittee with reportees Thursday at 11:15, and additional questions can be directed to his office regarding that meeting. If there are any comments or questions from this committee before we adjourn. All right. With no further business to come before the committee, this meeting will adjourn at 10:45.